little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
So we're going to look at persistent physical symptoms. So what I want to do is try and winkle out from you a little bit about what you think are the main challenges personally in this. And I'm going to give you a sort of menu of things that we can look at. So looking at some of the challenges, we could look a little bit at the epidemiology and why persistent physical symptoms are important. We could look at the diagnosis, and particularly because it occupies some thinking space, clinicians' concerns about missing structural disease and some tools and tips for how to avoid missing structural disease. But what I definitely want to do, and I think we should spend the next hour and a half on this, is do at least 3/4 hour rehearsal time, where what my proposal is to have someone who plays the patient, someone who plays the clinician, and we'll do what's called a goldfish. So we'll have those two out front, and everyone else is the support team, and then we'll keep swapping them around so that we can practice what I think is the most useful thing that you can do, which is to help people understand what might be happening, to provide explanation for what might be happening. And that's why I no longer call this area a medically unexplained symptoms, because the first thing you're going to do is try and explain it. And that's what people need. So I don't find it a particularly helpful phrase, MUS, although it still abounds in the literature, and this whole area is in a complete muddle linguistically, partly because of what I said right at the beginning about the fact that we've split the world into minds and bodies. But that's what I think we might try and do. Now, I'm not going to go through my surgery because you know that, but let's just briefly, perhaps just in pairs, just for a minute or two, just try and process what makes this a difficult area to work in. Let me just check. When I say persistent physical symptoms, what do you think I'm talking about?
I'm just calling it pain. Pain.
Persistent pain.
Persistent pain.
Yes.
Think of chest pain and palpitations and people being worried it's a heart attack.
Okay.
So is the first thing I think of.
Yeah.
I think just any sort of like physical symptoms, could be pain, could be numbness, or could be anything really, but it's no
not explained with the physical
structural damage, but patients still perceive that it's something real. They can still believe that something's wrong, but actually.
Okay.
Or maybe things that have been investigated to the nth degree and they're still happening and no cause has been found and they've had a million treatments and they're still the same.
Okay. Okay. So we know what we're talking about. We know roughly the territory we're in. Okay. So just a couple of minutes talking in pairs. What makes this challenging for both us and for patients? What sorts of issues are you coming up with? What are the challenges?
I think one of the challenges is that the GP become very, very helpless in a patient that comes with the same problem, with old investigations shows no more, yet there is pain, and she's on, for example, the patient has knee pain, and nothing showed wrong with the knee, and she was discharged from orthopedic. She was on Zomorph, and she was on Oramorph, she was on paracetamol, and she was still expecting that they give her something.
Yeah. Still expecting what for her?
Huh?
What was she still expecting?
To give
the painkiller.
Yeah. Yeah.
So kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I felt so helpless. I called my. I sent a message to CS. I said, "Look, this is the situation. I don't know what else I can give her." I changed the policy code.
No, none of that. Right? One of the trainers came up with a great phrase: don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah.
You may or may not be aware of a very common phrase, which is don't just stand there, do something. Mm-hmm. And what he flipped it around, don't just do something, stand there. And that's what you all need to learn. Don't just do something, stand there. Do now. So you're very dangerous creatures. You do understand this. Mm-hmm. Yes, doctors are dangerous people. They can do harm. Okay, not just by what they miss, but by their desperate need to be useful.
Yeah.
Okay, and that is a need that you have to curtail. Because there are many ways in which it's unhelpful to try too hard. And we could go into all sorts of things that have influenced my life, like Ivan Illich and philosophers and stuff, but doing nothing is a very important skill. Doing nothing in a caring and mindful and engaged and listening way, but doing nothing. Okay, so helplessness. What else? Why else is this difficult?
I was thinking that actually we're pushed right to the edge of our medical knowledge, often you know, you've got a complex problem, you've considered all the possible differentials and you're right at the limits of your knowledge, so you're not confident in explaining if it was a medical or physical answer. So that's challenging for us. And we were saying that the patient is very keen for an answer, which we don't have. So that's obviously a big unmet need and not satisfied.
Yeah.
For either.
Yeah. Keep going.
It can make me feel quite stressed because these are not 10-minute patients.
Yeah.
And in the middle of a surgery where you're already running late, it can make you sometimes feel like, I say irritable, and that's maybe the wrong word, but really kind of like quite panicky and stressed.
Yeah, you can get
and into, that's the opposite of what you need to be.
Blaming mode.
I can feel quite cross, which is terrible, and I feel guilty because,
And we know about transference, don't we?
Yeah.
We all know about transference. Yeah. Yes. Transfer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by transference?
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly the process is.
So when you're feeling the patient's shit.
Oh, yeah. That's
okay,
that's
so when the patient's feelings become your feelings,
yes.
And it's helpful to notice that. Why am I feeling, frustrated?
Yeah.
Because they are. Is part of it. Yeah. Anything else?
I think we talked about also like the patient point of view also. It's hard because you're not giving an answer like, what's causing this? What's the diagnosis? So sometimes they come, they say like, well, I'm not after medication, not after anything. I just need to know what's causing this.
Yeah.
And also sometimes that we, part of our job, I mean, sometimes they develop like an obsession with this, like, disease, we can say, or with this symptom, and then sometimes we feed into it when we investigate.
So
patients also can feel not believed by doctors, that the doctors think they're making it up, they're not believed by their employer maybe, so they're not it's not justified illness or they don't deserve people's sympathy or they don't deserve time off work. There's a lot of that feeling.
All in head, all in mind. Okay. So,
I'll just pitch in briefly. So, the patients are wanting an explanation. And in order for us to be able to give an explanation, we have to have a degree of understanding. And that, to reach that understanding, sometimes might have involved a lot of hurdles and a lot of investigations. But I would encourage you not always to do those investigations. But it can be possible for us to recognize the patterns. And one of the things that we'll probably be discussing shortly is how do we avoid those patients that do have physical problems missing those important ones? But how do we jump to, and I would use this word very cautiously, giving the patient a label in order that we can give them an explanation. So we don't necessarily want to label them because that's not always useful, that for them to be able to understand the process that's going on here, we kind of need a trigger. We kind of need to be able to find a consensus that we know what's not going on to be able to guide them as to what's going to be helpful here.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's a pretty good start.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusing.